Seen a signature of the mother of Pondicherry where she drew it in the shape of a bird with wings bent down towards the earth, and she called it the bird of peace descending on earth. No other word, the word peace, as simple as that. And this brief 45 minute exploration is about peace of mind in daily living, not about what's written in the books, written in the scriptures, but translating that into our lives through relationships, because daily living means relationships from morning to night, either relationships with people, could be strangers, family, friends, colleagues at work, or a relationship with what happens in our life during the course of the day. But daily living is relationships. And therefore, if you have a specific practice or sadhana, maybe 1 hour in the day, maybe 2 hours, but the rest of your day is a mess as far as relationships are concerned, then it is not much of a practice. As the famous saying goes, all life is yoga. This part is missed. So we'll explore the foundation of relationships briefly in our own experience and see if we get a different insight. We began with the Ganpati invocation. Ganpati is the Lord of Wisdom. The trunk of Ganpati is actually the third eye in sync with the Manipur Chakra, the seat of relationships. The rishis saw that when this is in sync, this is the form created. And for the common people like us, they drew the symbol of Ganpati. Now, what we need to understand is that the framework of life we have been born into is duality. everything has its opposite, left and right, up and down, front and back, rich and poor, pleasure and pain, me and the other. This is the framework of life. The structure of life is duality. But what has happened is that the me and the other has become me versus the other, and life has become a battle. This is everyone's experience. Now, if we see a baby, newly born baby, which is nothing but pure being, the universe provides for this baby. The mother comes and provides milk. Unasked, the baby as pure being, what is referred to as Bal Krishna, is provided for. Now this baby, by and by, as time goes by, starts sensing that this form comes towards me, a form which is separate from me comes towards me, and when I cry it comes running. If I do something which is crying, the baby feels the mother comes running. This is the birth of the ego. This is how the ego gets born, by the design of life, by the basic structure of life. And now this ego, as it grows up, is influenced, conditioned by the parents. What was their mindset? By the geographical location where the ego is born, by the economic environment, rich, poor, middle class, by the religion. And this child grows up, school, college, and so on and so forth, and develops views and opinions based on its genetics and its conditioning, over neither of which it had any control at all. This is everyone's experience. What I think, feel, and do is based on two factors, which you can say become my nature. My predispositions, my nature, if I'm gentle, quiet, timid, or if I'm tough, my nature, my conditioning, neither of which I created. Yet, I feel I'm right. This is my view, and others are wrong. The minute I feel I am right, I feel this is the truth, not realizing that everyone I meet in life is shaped by their genetics and their conditioning, just like me. So who is right and who is wrong? Everyone is right from their point of view. I may agree or disagree. That is my prerogative. I may agree with your point of view, or I may have a different point of view. But I will not convince you that my way is the only way and yours is wrong. I accept. Sometimes our views match, sometimes they don't. So I will not inflict subtle violence on the other by forcing them to see things the way I see them. That is what stops happening. When I trust that there is a higher power who has designed everyone precisely the way that power has, I am no longer trying to play God. When I accept that in a kitchen, each gadget is designed to produce something. The toaster is going to produce toast only. The juicer can only produce juice. The way it is designed, can I force the toaster to produce juice? But with human beings, we want to do that. We want to force them to be a certain way, which we feel is the right way. Is not that a form of violence? Subtle though it may be. So what happens if I don't agree with someone? I express my point of view and leave it to God. I agree to disagree without being disagreeable. I'm open to the next moment. Okay, all right, this point of view we don't agree with. Let's move on the journey of life. But what we tend to do, we hate, condemn, criticize, judge. That is what we do, morning to evening. The content of our mind reveals the truth. We miss this, you see. We miss this aspect of life and living. The sage Nisargadatta Maharaj said, to criticize anyone or anything is to criticize the affairs of Brahman. To criticize anyone or anything means you feel you know best. God does not know what he is doing. You know. So this compulsion to criticize and condemn with this understanding gets taken away. This absurd distortion of me versus the other, when it is seen for what it is, dissolves. And with that, my mind is open, available to honor the person in front of me as an equal aspect of the divine like I am. And therefore, in your life, the people you hate the most, the people who push your buttons the most, are your greatest teachers. These relationships need to be looked at and resolved. Because all relationships reflect our relationship with ourselves. And this is not a theory. If you take the antagonist in your life, maybe a sibling, maybe your family member, someone you didn't get along with at work, and you think of what words come up about this person, make no mistake, these words are coming up in your own consciousness, nowhere else. There was a sage called Siddharameshwar Maharaj who said, let's say you call someone a thief, and you keep calling him a thief. You tell others, this person is a thief. You tell someone else, this person is a thief. It is the content of your consciousness in which the word thief is being repeated all the time. But because of this design of life, it looks like we've imposed a label on someone else. But it is within us. The thief is within us. So whom are we calling a thief? Practical understanding. And that is why this concept of the third eye is not abstract. What is the eye of Shiva? These are the eyes of duality with which I see this physical world. And the third eye of Shiva is the eye of singularity. One vision. I see that all the gadgets in the kitchen would be dead if they didn't have electricity running through them. But what has happened? Because we are so enamored by the forms, we forget that electricity is electricity. What is running through my veins, which makes me conscious, is what is running through your veins. There is no difference between us, because if it wasn't, either you or me would be dead. And therefore, as the scriptures say, consciousness is speaking through one instrument and listening through the other. But consciousness is speaking. Consciousness is listening. Without consciousness, we are dead instruments. This gets missed in daily living. Because if we truly lived this understanding, this basic understanding, we would find that our relationships become more comfortable. We find we accept people more and more for who they are. And in doing so, we accept ourselves for the way God has made us. We accept that all our imperfections are perfectly placed because they are based on our conditioning, our nature, which God created. More importantly, any flaws we see in anyone else are not really their doing. Who knows what kind of trouble people had in their childhood? We are all an accumulation of the events since birth. But we are so quick to pass judgment on someone we meet today without realizing where is this person coming from? What did he or she go through as a child? Yesterday I gave the example. In my own office, there was a staff member who was underperforming. And the supervisor was getting frustrated to the point where the supervisor started abusing this staff member. You're not good enough, you're useless. How many times to tell you, are you stupid? This is abuse. Then this matter came to me and I called the supervisor. I said, what happened? And he said the same thing. I said, has it occurred to you that this person might be trying their best, but their best is not good enough for you. But the person might be trying their best based on their capacity God gave them. So why is there this need to abuse him? Why can't you accept he has his limitations, he doesn't meet your standards, and then you take a decision whether he should stay or go? But why this thing of abusing? And he looked at me and he said, "Sir, this is the only way I know, because this is the way my superior treated me in my previous organization to get the work done. This is how strong conditioning can be. We become blind to our faults to the extent that we destroy others' peace. Forget us not being at peace, we do a damn good job of destroying others' peace. It could be in your own household." There was an ancient science which appears to be lost, the Indian science of Surya Vignan, the knowledge of the sun. And there was a master of masters in Varanasi, Vishuddhanand. Now, this master would sit in his satsang and had a magnifying glass next to him. And let's say a child came. He would ask the child, "Beta, what do you want?" And the child would say, "I want a puppy." "A puppy? No problem." He would take his magnifying glass, sunlight pouring in through the window, with a few movements of the hand, and a puppy would manifest. Sounds like magic. Someone else, a lady, came in and she said, "Maharaj, I would like flowers for my temple." "No problem, flowers." And then he explained. He said, according to the science of Surya Vignan, everything in life, every object, animate and inanimate, is based on a combination of the 180 rays of the sun, or 360, I'm not sure. Everything in manifestation is made up of this combination, which means every object is made up of light, and a master can manipulate these rays of light to produce objects. But that is how similar we all are. We are all bundles of congealed light. Then one day, Anandmayi Ma was passing through Varanasi. And she said, "Maharaj, why do all this tamasha? You are attracting people for miracles." And he said, "Ma, what can I do? They only come to see miracles, but at least now they will come. And then I will explain to them the higher truths of life. But I am demonstrating to them that everything comes from light. With little buddhi, people should understand that everyone they encounter, the stranger, the lover, the beggar on the street, is coming from the same source. But this is the burden the ego carries. It forgets all this. This ego with its sense of doership. You did something to me, so I hate you. That finger pointing, without realizing that in life, things happen. Sometimes pleasure, many times pain. That is the design of duality. And everyone is an instrument through whom what is meant to happen, happens. Which is what our Bhagavad Gita is all about. A book for daily living. But we tend to read a verse and say the Gita says this. And that is precisely what Lord Krishna told Arjuna. You are saying, "I refuse to fight. I'm not going to fight my preceptors. I'm putting my bow and arrow down." You've been trained to be a warrior all your life. You are born into a warrior clan. You have been prepared for this moment. Now you feel, "I am doing something." And with that pride and arrogance, you say, "I'm going to put down my bow." But you don't realize that I, Krishna, as the Lord of time, have already killed them. You are the instrument, the most appropriate instrument, through whom the killing will happen. So pick up your bow and arrow and fulfill your dharma. So Arjuna accepted that my action is ordained by the source, which I thought was my action. And all this baggage which the thinking mind carries throughout the day, going into the dead past of what people did to me, what they said to me, how much hurt they have caused me, or going into an imaginary future. What could happen? What if this one says this? What if this one does this to me? That baggage of the thinking mind is what we are carrying to a grave, a dead past, or an imaginary future. People walking on the street are so consumed by their thinking that they are not present to the act of walking. So these wisdom teachings destroy this thinking mind, which is based on doership. And the mind is awakened when there is work to be done. It is done to the best of one's ability because no thinking is included. My teacher would give this example of a surgeon who is operating on someone. The surgeon has to use all his faculties, all his experience in this moment to conduct the operation in the best possible way. That is the working mind. He is fully present. Now, just before this surgery, a fellow doctor comes and tells him, hey, you better be careful. This is a politician you're operating on. If something goes wrong, your career is over. Now the surgeon starts thinking, my God, I better be careful. And what was supposed to be a pure surgery is now stained by this thinking mind going into an imaginary future. What if? What if I do something wrong? What will be the consequences? And what could have been a pristine and pure operation is now clouded by the mind dancing all over the place. So our relationship with people, when it is lived through this dimension of understanding, it actually means our relationship is no longer with individuals, it is with God. I am seeing God in everyone means what? I don't have to see a figure of God in everyone. I accept that the same force is running through everyone. That's it. So my relationship is with God, a living God, not a murti in one corner of my home. That is why I say this is the ultimate bhakti. If you accept people for who they are, the way God created them, that is bhakti. I may not have to sing and dance and chant bhajans. But if I see the one in the many, I see no separation. So by and by, if I do see the one in the many, I am more at peace. Few things rattle me. My mind is not over the place. I find I am resting in peace most of the time. And I find that people are drawn to me because people are naturally drawn to peace. If there are two people sitting here on two chairs and one is at peace and the other has a highly agitated mind, I can assure you, if you were put in front of both these people and asked to choose next to whom you would like to sit, without them uttering a word, you would be drawn to the one who looks more peaceful. Because peace is a vibration, which is a vibration of inclusion. Embracing. And our own experience of deep sleep is the greatest gift God has given us. Deep sleep, and we wake up and we say, I slept so well. Such a beautiful sleep. How do you know? You were absent in deep sleep. You and your story of life were absent in deep sleep. That is why it was peaceful. Your drama of life, your drama of relationships, the ups and downs, the story which creates the me, vanished in deep sleep. That is why, as the mother said, the bird of peace descending on earth. Ramana Maharshi in one sentence said, the state of equanimity is the state of bliss. So simple. All there is to life. Contentment, equanimity, seeing life flow by, like traffic on the street. The cars go, come and go. You witness life by and by. The quality of witnessing starts filtering into daily living rather than observing and judging. Life is short between this thing called birth and death. They say the number of breaths we take are already determined. The point is, how many are we going to convert to agitated breaths and how many peaceful breaths? Supposing you were arguing with someone right now and a voice in your head came and said, a person in front of you is going to die in 30 minutes. Would you not want to wish at least 30 minutes of peace for that person rather than continuing your argument for 30 minutes? But we take it for granted. We are here to argue, to fight, to convince others. That is why the American healer Joel Goldsmith, the foundation of his teaching was, give up the belief in two powers. All there is God, consciousness. He said, if you give up the belief in two powers, that is when healing can take place. He was a master healer. And therefore he would tell his group phrases like, withdraw all opposition, lay down your sword, stop this battle of life. Advaita, this was referred to as the original sin, means what? Very simple. I think in my life, I am the subject and you are the object, because I can look at you and then I pronounce judgment upon you. I play God and pass judgment on you without realizing that I am an object in your consciousness, without realizing we are both objects created by the same source. This part is missed. So next time there is a conflict with someone, next time there is an argument, what we will find with this basic understanding now, we will still say what we have to say, we will express ourselves, but we leave the results to God. I have said what I have had to say. I am not going to repeat it 100 times. What is meant to happen will happen as per the divine will. And I let life flow. Life becomes simpler and simpler. May not be easier, but simpler. And that's really all there is to this drama of relationships. If they are not resolved, our relationship with ourselves will not resolve. Because each relationship is an aspect of our own self. So I would like to end by reading 3 or 4 lines of Sri Aurobindo, which says this whole thing I've spoken about in just those words. The Lord is there equally in all beings. We have to make no essential distinctions between ourselves and others. The wise and the ignorant, friend and enemy, man and animal, the saint and the sinner. We must hate none, despise none, be repelled by none. For in all we have to see the one disguised or manifested at his pleasure. He is a little revealed in one or more revealed in another, or concealed and wholly distorted in others according to his will and his knowledge of what is best for that which he intends to become in form, in them, and to do in works in their nature. All is ourself, one self that has taken many shapes. And that is why Ramana Maharshi, when asked, how should I deal with others? He said, there are no others. This is it. So that's what I have to share with you all very briefly, that any path, any wisdom teachings must impact daily living. If you feel that they are not impacting your daily living, you're not being able to express them through your relationships, it's an invitation to relook, understand better what words you read, and bring it into your attitude to people, to what happens in your life, for every moment of it. Nisargadatta Maharaj said, between the banks of pleasure and pain.
If this teaching has helped you experience more peace in your daily living and you feel inspired to support it, you can visit the Support the Teaching link on gautamsachdeva.com. You can also join the mailing list to stay updated on the latest talks, retreats, and other events.